You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Thank you, Grant. We're very blessed in this community to have such musical talent to call on, and I'm very grateful for the willingness with which that talent is volunteered. So, good morning, and welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it means to serve you, and this is worship because it serves you by raising to worth the things that matter. My name is Miranda Pallett, a member of this congregation, and I'm leading the service today. I welcome you here on behalf of the generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. As I call on Hugo to light our chalice, I read some words by Reverend Joan Javier Duval, minister of the Unitarian Church of Montpellier, Vermont. You are beloved, and you are welcome here. Whether tears have fallen from your eyes this past week, or gleeful laughter has spilled out of your smiling mouth, you are beloved, and you are welcome here. Whether you are feeling brave or broken-hearted, defiant or defeated, fearsome or fearful, you are beloved, and you are welcome here. Whether you have untold stories buried deep inside or stories that have been forced beyond the edges of comfort, you are beloved and you are welcome here. Whether you have made promises, broken promises, or are renewing your promises, you are beloved and you are welcome here. Whatever is on your heart, however it is with your soul in this moment, you are beloved and you are welcome here. In this space of welcome and acceptance, commitment and recommitment, of covenant and connection, let us worship together. I now invite Mary to the front to read a tale by Hans Christian Andersen called The Emperor's New Clothes. It possibly has a moral.
Once upon a time, there was an emperor who loved clothes more than anything else. He had more clothes than anyone in the land. The emperor's clothes filled all the closets in most of the rooms of the royal palace. It was a good thing the emperor was very rich because he spent so much money on clothes. The emperor selected only the finest, most comfortable fabrics, and he hired the best tailors to work for him. The emperor also spent a lot of money on mirrors. He thought his fancy clothes made him look quite dashing, so he spent most of his free time looking at himself. The emperor's pride was well known throughout the kingdom. Everyone thought he was quite silly to spend so much time in front of his mirrors. They made jokes behind the emperor's back, but no one ever said anything directly to his face. They didn't want to make him angry, because he was, after all, the ruler of the land. Word of the silly emperor who loved fine clothes reached two thieves in a faraway land. Instead of making jokes about him, the thieves thought of a way that they could use the emperor's pride to make themselves rich. The thieves dressed up as traveling tailors and made the long journey to the emperor's palace. They told the palace guards that they had the most wonderful fabric in all of the world, and they asked for permission to show it to the emperor. Of course, the guards let them into the palace. The sneaky thieves presented themselves to the emperor and his wife. They explained that the fabric was not only wonderful, but magical too. Only the wisest people in the land will see this fabric, they said. It will be invisible to fools and to those who are unfit for their office. When the thieves opened their bags, the emperor squinted. He saw nothing at all in their hands. Why, I must be a fool, thought the emperor. Either that, or I do not deserve to sit on this throne. The emperor was embarrassed and he could not see the fabric. So he said, this is the most magnificent fabric I have ever seen. The emperor asked his wife what she thought of the magical fabric. She couldn't see anything, but she didn't want anyone to think she was a fool. So she said, it is quite extraordinary. It's like no other fabric that I know. Knowing his wife was no fool, the emperor thought the fabric must be real even though he could not see it. He offered the thieves 20 pieces of gold to make a new suit for him. They thanked the emperor and went to work right away. When you wear this suit, it will feel as light as a spider's web against your skin. The other thief explained, you might even feel as though you're wearing nothing at all. I can't wait to try on my new suit, said the emperor. The thieves smiled slyly and winked at each other. They had finished sizing him up. There's a picture of the thieves. They're pretending to sew, and they're eating everything in the palace. Finally, the thieves brought the emperor the new suit. He put it on slowly, being careful not to snag the fine stitching he couldn't see. Then he strutted around the room. He had never felt so dashing. This is truly the finest suit I have ever had, the emperor said to the royal minister. Tell me, what do you think of it? If you are happy, then I am happy, said the royal minister, who was truly anything but happy. In his eyes, the emperor was standing in front of a mirror in his underwear, admiring a new suit that wasn't even there. I guess this is the rated G version. He's still got his underwear on. The emperor wanted to show off his new suit to everyone in the land. He asked the royal minister to call for a royal parade the next day. If this is what you want, said the minister, then you shall have your parade. Everyone in the kingdom was excited about the parade. They had long ago grown bored with all the stories of the emperor's clothes, but what interested them now was the new magical fabric. They had all heard that fools could not see the fabric, and they wanted to find out who among them was a fool and who was not. On the day of the parade, everyone pushed and shoved to get the best view, but when the emperor appeared, everyone was shocked. The emperor was in his underwear. Nobody in the crowd could see the emperor's suit, but of course no one would admit it out loud. Nobody wanted to look like a fool. Instead, the people said, "How handsome you look, Your Majesty. That is certainly a splendid suit. I never knew any fabric could look so wonderful." Suddenly, a young boy cried out over the noisy crowd. "The emperor isn't wearing a new suit," he said. "What is everybody talking about? The emperor is wearing nothing but his underwear." The emperor quickly turned to look at the crowd. They stood in stunned silence. Instantly, the emperor knew that the boy was telling the truth. He realized he had been a fool, and now he was parading himself throughout the kingdom in his underwear. Needless to say, the emperor felt quite embarrassed and foolish. All at once, everyone in the crowd began to laugh. They realized they'd been foolish, too. They pretended to see a suit that was not even there because they were afraid of what the others would think. They felt silly for not telling the truth to the emperor. After the parade, the emperor quickly returned to the palace and put on some clothes, and then he called the young honest boy to speak with him in his court. "I have decided to make you a junior minister. You have shown that you are very brave. You risked being called a fool to tell me the truth," the emperor said. "You will always be one of my most trusted friends." "Thank you," said the boy. "I will always be honest with you, even if you don't like what I have to say." "I'm counting on it," said the emperor. And I won't read the moral to the story because I trust you can work it out.
Thank you, Mary. It's now time for our younger Unitarians to have fun and learn in Sunday Club. We hope the older Unitarians will have fun and learn both during the address and by sharing coffee, tea, and conversation at the close of the service. Our service is freely shared with you all. However, your offerings to this church are most welcome. Contributions can be made using the tap device in the foyer or by leaving an amount on the altar. It is our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and bind that fellowship and covenant with each other by sharing with us any recent event that has been significant in your spiritual life, and mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice. As some things lie too deep for words, you are also very welcome to light a candle in silence. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening this circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. I'll now light one final candle to represent all those things we choose not to share that remain silent in our hearts. May all the things we've shared be honoured by this beloved community. Lumpy in Lycra. I admit it. After 50 years of lax living, growing 2 10-pound babies, and eating several hundred stress-relieving Tim Tams, my muscles sag in where they ought to bulge out, and my stomach sags out where it ought to tuck in. I became all too aware of this a few years back when I started doing aerobics. Well, for some in the class it was aerobics. I'll give you a demonstration.
The instructor, Perky Pan, skipped about, very enthusiastic. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, to the left, to the left. And in the front row of the aerobics class were the sweet young things, dancing like graceful gazelles. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, to the left, to the left. Then there's the back row. And here I stand with my fellow lumpies, more like good-natured gorillas. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, to the right, to the left. Perky Pan calls out, very enthusiastic still. Don't worry, loves, try your other left. And then, at one side, lithe in her leotard, stands fit Fiona. Arms crossed, her face a blank mask. What did she think of us dumpy, bumpy, lumpies? And that, my friends, is indeed the question. What do people think of us? Followed closely by, how much should we care? My fellow lumpies and I work out at the gym despite what others think of us, or more specifically, what we fear they might think of us. Because there's a little-known fear that we all encounter from time to time, a potentially crippling fear called Alladoxophobia. Alla whatta whatta? Alladoxophobia. It's the fear of others' opinions. Those of you who have led a service or given a presentation might be very familiar with this particular fear. You know how you feel in the lead up to a speech. The anxiety slowly builds, and with it comes an annoying sense of dread. Your heart is racing, your mind goes blank, your legs wobble, and your hands shake uncontrollably. As you well know, the difficulty with public speaking is not the speaking, it's the public. For example, right now, I'm up here on stage and I'm hugely aware of the potential for embarrassment. Irrespective of reality, I look at you, looking at me, and I nervously imagine you thinking, "What is she on about? She does look a bit lumpy." Or, "It's after 11. If she'd just hurry up and finish, we could all go to the kitchen for a nice cup of tea." And who here can relate to that thought process? Because when you pause for reflection, you begin to see the surreptitious danger of alladoxophobia. This fear of others' opinions can literally leave us tied up in knots, not leading a service, not challenging our beliefs, not expanding our horizons, nor pushing beyond our comfort zones. Soon enough, we're in a life half-lived, anticipating failure before we've even begun. And all because we're afraid that someone might laugh at our lumpy bits. So, if all of us are at least a little alladoxophobic, how can we move beyond this fear and live our lives to the full? Our 7 UU principles challenge us to do so, as a discussion from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Puerto Rico shows. We'll look at a larger version of this slide in a moment. Can I call Richard to the front, please, for the reading?
The overall structure of the principles reflects the fact that human beings, as human beings, we are always in dynamic tension between separateness and connection, between individualism and community, between autonomy and interdependence. The poles or pillars of this tension are represented by the 1st and the 7th principles: the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and the interdependent web of all existence. As we move from the ends towards the centre, the paired principles balance one another, expressing related concepts by reflecting a different point on the continuum from separateness to connection, a different resolution of the tension between the two poles. For example, the 2nd and 6th principles both address the issue of justice, but one sees it more from the individualistic perspective of justice, equity, and compassion for each person, while the other offers the perspective of community, affirming peace, liberty, and justice for all. A similar balance exists between the 3rd and the 5th principles, where acceptance of one another as individuals corresponds to the right of each person to speak and act publicly in the context of community according to their conscience, and the encouragement of individual spiritual growth corresponds to the affirmation of democratic process as the means by which the community itself can grow towards its greatest potential. In the centre of the principles, at the point where individualism and interdependence meet, is the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The principles not only affirm the search for meaning as central to the human enterprise, but also suggest that the very meaning we search for, the meaning of human existence itself, is to be found in the fact that we are at once separate individuals of worth and dignity and independent parts of the indivisible whole. Moreover, the same structure also suggests that a free and responsible search for truth and meaning does not mean a purely individual search, because none of us is a purely individual being. Rather, it is inherently something we carry out both in the privacy of our own souls and in community with others.
Let's break down that reading and examine it more closely. In our seven principles, we see a continuum between separateness at the top and connection at the bottom. There's a continuum between autonomy and interdependence. Principles 1 and 7 are at opposite poles, commenting on the worth of the individual and our interconnected web of existence. Principles 2 and 6 address justice, with justice, equity, and compassion for each person in Principle 2, and justice in our society as a whole in Principle 6. Principles 3 and 5, which I've been thinking a lot about while preparing this address, look at our rights and responsibilities. There's our right to be accepted and our responsibility to act with good conscience. There's our own journey towards spiritual growth and also the democratic rights of others to do the same. And Principle 4 sits in the middle, describing the free and responsible search for meaning within our souls and as part of a community. Thinking then of those seven principles, how might the fear of others' opinions impact us as members and visitors to this fellowship today? Let's take some time to share ideas with those around us and consider three questions. The first is, what situation have you been in where you felt a fear of others' opinions? What situation have you been in where you felt a fear of others' opinions? Please chat with your neighbours for a while. I hear an excited buzz. A next question, picking up on some of the conversations, is, did you overcome this fear? And if so, how? Did you overcome this particular fear, this instance where you feared someone's opinion? And if so, how? Please share.
I'm happy to share this one. That's me.
Thank you again for your excitement. I have one last question. We've talked today about the seven principles. How might a fear of others' opinions impact our ability to be guided by these principles? What could we do about that? Does a fear of others' opinions sometimes get in the way of us trying to commit to the Unitarian principles? So if you could chat for one last time, please, about how a fear of others' opinions might impact you being guided by these principles. Ooh, she saved the tough one till last. I've heard so many thought-provoking ideas. Many of you have commented on the process of maturing and getting a better sense of who you are and basing more of your opinion of yourself on your own understanding of who you are and opinions of others being less important. So one comment I've heard today here is, your opinion of me is none of my business. There was also a group discussing the difference between others having opinions just as thoughts in their heads and then going on to manifest, take action based on those opinions. And that there's a tipping point where while we don't need to be afraid of others' thoughts, we have a genuine need to fear how some of those thoughts might be expressed. There was debate in a few sectors of the room about how this is a church that encourages people to express opinions, and yet those opinions need to be expressed gently. Opinions give us ideas to think about, and yet one particular view is not necessarily better than another person's view. They're just different. And this church, through its principles, encourages us to embrace that. For those who are interested in learning more about trying to live without a fear of other people's opinions, you might be interested in the work of Stephen and Sean Covey. So Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective, you fill in the blank. And one of those is about the progression from dependence to independence to interdependence, which fits well with this. Or if you want a 4-letter acronym, FOPO, F-O-P-O, fear of people's opinions. And there's quite a lot of journal articles in psych literature about FOPO, fear of people's opinions. To group together some of the other ideas shared here, there's possibly a 3-step plan for success in not putting so much stock in the opinions of others. First, we can realise that everyone has lumpy bits. Sometimes they're the obvious ones, wobbly thighs, for example. And sometimes they're more subtle, those little vulnerabilities that we'd rather keep to ourselves for fear that someone shames us. We might struggle to balance a checkbook. We might have a shyness with strangers. We might have made poor decisions in the past. Second, no one is a mind reader. Do you remember Fit Fiona? Who knows what she was thinking? She might have been planning what to cook for dinner, or mulling over a clue in the newspaper crossword. She might even have been admiring us lumpies and thinking, they are doing so much better than last week. Finally, we can take a leap of faith, timidly expose our vulnerabilities, and be pleasantly surprised by a reality of acceptance and support. To overcome our fear, we should go home, don our lycra, and liberate our lumpiness. Lumpies of the world, unite! I ask you now to please stand as you are able so that we can conclude our service with a benediction. The Reverend Dr. Cynthia Lundrum is the minister of the Universalist Unitarian Church of East Liberty in Clark Lake, Michigan. And she writes, "We leave this gathered community, but we don't leave our connection, our concerns, our care for each other, our service to each other, to the world, and to our faith continues. Until we are together again, friends, be strong, be well, be true, and be loving.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.